Emergency services rushing to a North London street in the early hours of Monday after a vehicle rammed pedestrians at Finsbury Park just after midnight. Police say one person is dead and several others wounded, with many receiving treatment at the scene. The British Muslim Council says a van ploughed through worshippers as they were leaving a mosque after prayers.
Vice President Pence lawyers up as the Russia probe heats up, his office said on Thursday. Pence hiring Richard Cullen, a former federal prosecutor who has long ties to former FBI Director James Comey and who represented FIFA President Sepp Blatter in the corruption probe into World Soccer's governing body. Pence has seldom addressed the Russia issue, which has overshadowed Trump's domestic agenda and issues Pence has worked on intensively with Republican lawmakers.
The biggest issue ahead of us is, of course, our relationship in the context of Brexit, our trading relationship with the European Union. There has been a lot of discussion about the importance of the single market in that and whether we just simply need to access the single market or whether we need to be members of it. And that has to be the goal in those Brexit negotiations that start today.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's June 19th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you here for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day, another business week, too. And lots going on this week. You heard there in the opening montage in Great Britain, the Brexit negotiations begin in earnest today, just as the country is dealing with what appears to be another terrorist attack, this one targeting apparently a mosque in London. At least one person is dead. We'll continue monitoring that in our news blocks this morning as we move forward. Lots happening, too. We'll bring in a little bit later on a discussion, conversation about how minimum wage, how much house or apartment you might be able to afford with minimum wage. That'll be in our second segment this morning. And we'll have our spotlight this morning on Instacart in the wake of the big decision on Friday involving Amazon purchasing Whole Foods. Whole Foods, a big customer of Instacart. But first, let's begin with the markets on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Futures in this country are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning, up about 68 points now on the Dow. The S&P and NASDAQ are looking higher as well. Crude oil is trading up almost a third, $44.88 a barrel. Around the globe this morning in Asia, markets are generally higher in subdued trading after Wall Street ended last week barely higher as Amazon purchased Whole Foods. There were some other interests in the market involving tech stock, but it was really the retailer stocks. All of the grocery stores took a hit after the announcement. Brexit negotiations, as I mentioned, start today in Europe. Markets there are generally mixed this morning. Mixed to higher, the FTSE is up about 34 points, the DAX up 88, and the CAC is up 42 points. Back to Asia this morning, markets are all higher. The Nikkei up almost a half a percent, 124 points. The Hang Seng up a full percent, 298 points. Some news that we're watching this morning, Boeing has unveiled its newest aircraft, 737 aircraft, called the 737 MAX at the air show in Paris today. The number of orders likely to surge on this aircraft. Boeing is generating this new MAX 10 that, according to the airline, Chicago-based airline, will be able to have a range of 3,215 nautical miles with one auxiliary tank, gas tank. It's going to be called the 737 MAX 10, again, officially being unveiled today at the air show in Paris. Some other stories we're watching, too. A key part of the House Republicans' plan to overhaul the way corporations pay taxes is apparently on life support, leaving lawmakers scrambling to save one of President Trump's biggest priorities, increasing the chances the GOP will simply pass a tax cut instead of overhauling the tax code. The proposed tax on imports, central to the GOP plan to lower the overall corporate tax rate, it would generate about $1 trillion over the next decade to finance the lower rates without adding to the deficit. But the tax faces strong opposition from retailers, automakers, and the oil industry. A growing number of congressional Republicans, too, have come out against it. Can Amazon, the company that's persuaded people to buy ever more items online, win enough of them over to have fresh groceries arrive in an Amazon box? That's the question today. $13.7 billion was the deal for Whole Foods. If it goes through, Amazon will get the advantage of using stores as mini distribution hubs, those Whole Foods stores, to deliver items to customers perhaps as close as your neighborhood. One of the companies that's right now working with Whole Foods is Instacart. Instacart's expanding their service all across the country. We're happy to have with us on the opening bell today the Chief Business Officer, Neelam Ganan-Thiran, who is with us this morning to talk about where they're expanding and how much this deal might impact Instacart. Neelam, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell. Let's talk a little bit first about the expansion. You have more expansion in the news.
Yeah, we're very excited. We're very excited about the success of the Chicago market overall. And as a result, we're happy to announce that we're going to be expanding very broadly across the broader Chicago area. And Chicago is actually our second market ever for Instacart. So it's one of our oldest markets. We launched it over four and a half years ago, and it's still one of our fast-growing markets. And especially around winter, Chicago customers love a service like Instacart, so we're very excited to bring it to more people.
Well, for our listeners that don't use Instacart or have never heard of it before, give us a thumbnail of what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a service that partners with grocery stores like Whole Foods and Costco and Binny's and, you know, some of the local independents like Tony's and Pete's and Petco, et cetera. And we partner with them to allow customers to go online or go on our app, order their groceries, and have it delivered to their homes within 1 hour or same day. That's the magic of Instacart. You don't, you know, for the times you don't have the availability to go into a store, we're able to bring the food to you. So we've been, you know, we're 5 years old. We exist in 65 markets across the country and work with 160 retailers.
And I guess for most of us, we think of the competition. I mean, coming to mind is First Peapod. What do you consider to be your competition? Are they them? Is that your competition?
Well, interestingly enough, we're actually admirers of Peapod. We work with a lot of with Ahold, which is Peapod's parent company. We work with their Giant banner and their Stop and Shop banner. So basically, you know, Peapod's got a great service. We're a same day service, so when you need your groceries the same day, so we wouldn't consider them really our competition. We actually think of them as very complementary, and they you know, they've been doing this for a very long time, and we have a lot of respect for the Peapod model. The real competition for us, as well as our grocery stores, is first and foremost, you know, the pure e-commerce players like an Amazon, but also just the kind of takeout food restaurants, et cetera. So we want people cooking at home more. We think that's happening less and less, and that's a problem. And a service like Instacart actually allows customers to get that time back and have, you know, stay at home and cook versus having to, you know, go into a grocery store and spend that time. So we're pulling dollars that otherwise would have gone to takeout restaurants, the pizza delivery, et cetera.
And when we look at the statistics of the number of people actually going to grocery stores themselves, we see a really strong decline there. And is that are you happy about that?
No, I mean, what we're focused on is bringing trips to our grocery store partners like Whole Foods and Costco, et cetera. And that we think of trips as it could be in the store, it could be online. We just want to make sure that dollars stay within their four walls. And that's what we're trying to empower them to do in an increasingly Amazon world, right? In an increasingly Amazon.com world. So we're enabling brick and mortar to use the asset that they have, which is all these stores, to actually get product to customers faster than anyone else can. Because if you think about where stores are located, they're located next to customers. They're where the demand is. So we're trying to find a way to get these stores to use the best asset they have, which is their stores, and allow them to access customers with those stores.
Neelam, hang on with us. We're going to take a break here. Neelam Ganan-Thiran is the Chief Business Officer at Instacart, on with us this morning talking about their expansion. We'll continue with Neelam as the opening bell continues.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods sent grocery stores, big retailers, and food makers plunging on Friday. The S&P 500 inched up a fraction of a point to 2433. The Dow added 24 points to a record high, 21384. The NASDAQ fell nearly 14 points. Unemployment in four states fell to record lows last month. The largest job gains were in Alaska, Alabama, and Louisiana. Washington, D.C. recorded the largest increase ahead of all states. Nationwide unemployment rate is at a 16-year low of 4.3%. The House Republicans' plan to overhaul the corporate tax structure is on life support, leaving lawmakers scrambling to save one of President Trump's biggest priorities and increasing the chances the GOP will simply pass a tax cut. And McDonald's is ending its Olympic sponsorship, a relationship that dates back to 1976. Marketing director says the fast food giant is focusing on different business priorities. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Neelam Ganan-Thiran is the chief business officer at Instacart, expanding their service to 70 new zip codes in the Midwest area. And Neelam, before the break, we were talking about some of those expansion plans and bringing our listeners who may not be familiar with Instacart up to speed on this. Give us a sense of when we go to the site, how does it work? What's the interaction like from start to finish?
Yeah, you go on our app or website, you put in your zip code if it's your first time ordering. With your zip code, you select a store. You'll be given a list of stores from which you can shop. Let's say you're somewhere where Tony's is available in Chicago. You click Tony's, you're shown their products and their pricing from the store which we're going to go pick up the groceries from. Our folks we usually have folks that are already in the grocery store stationed there. They pick and pack the groceries. And then we have other folks who are the delivery personnel. They'll pick up the groceries and deliver it to your home within 1 hour. And all of that with just a touch of the button on the app. And the next time you come, you can press one button and reorder everything you last ordered, or you can go through and add and remove items, et cetera.
Obviously, when people look at this, they look at that delivery time, but they also look at the price. What is the strategy in terms of staying competitive and kind in the customer's eyes with those numbers?
Yeah, really great question. I think, it's important for us to keep the price to the customer as low as possible, but also make this a sustainable business so that it's always something, a service that our grocers can offer their customers. So we charge a customer two ways. One, they can either opt to buy our membership program, which is $149 a year, and they get unlimited free delivery for the year, right? No delivery fee for the year. That's option one. Option two is they can pay us $5.99 per delivery.
You mentioned Amazon in all of this. Talk to me a little bit about the level of competition here. Is it going to be you and Amazon when all of this washes out, do you think?
You know, it's very tough to say, but increasingly it's starting to look that way, right? We have the utmost respect for Amazon and the fantastic culture and company they've built, but what we're focused on is helping our brick-and-mortar customers compete and our retailers compete. And increasingly, these retailers are finding that it makes sense to partner with a service like ours because we are a technology and software-focused firm. That way, they can keep doing what they're good at, which is maintaining great stores, picking the right assortment, building their brand, pricing the right way, and we can focus on the technology and the logistics.
Well, let's talk about that last part, the technology and logistics. From the moment you had this idea to now, how has the technology advanced to make what you do better and easier?
Yeah, so great question. I think there's the biggest enabler for our success has been the smartphone, right? If you think about what the smartphone has been able to do, which, wasn't available to, other services like a Peapod, 20 years ago, it allows us to, everyone's walking around with a supercomputer in their pocket, basically. So our personal shoppers, the folks who are picking and packing the groceries, they're walking around with a supercomputer in their pocket, and we're able to communicate directly with them and give them orders to pick up and allow them to develop relationships with our customers where if they can't find the quinoa that the customer wanted or the bag with the box of cookies that they wanted, they exchange messages with the customer and say, hey, my app is recommending this cookie instead based on your last purchase. Are you okay with that? And that seems relatively simple, that conversation flow, but it's enabled by the smartphone and a lot of data science in the background. So this is a lot of complicated algorithms based on what you've ordered before, what people like you have ordered before, so that we can make the right recommendation to you. Also, there's a lot of complicated math to just get groceries to a customer's door within an hour, right? If you think about it, it's hard enough for it. I know it doesn't take me an hour when I go to a grocery store. It's more like 2 hours. So there's technology that we've built that allows us to bypass the checkout lane, to navigate the store environment. So picture digital maps of exactly where everything's stocked so that our people can fly through the store when they're picking groceries. All of that is enabled by software.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point there, the 2 hours trip to the grocery store. Have you really thought about that? Have you put a number on what kind of time you're saving people?
Yes. So on an average week, it's between 2 to 5 hours. And if you think about it, that includes travel time as well as time in-store shopping. And the reason there's a range is it depends the number of stores the customer shops, right? So some customers split their grocery trips across, you know, a Costco, a Whole Foods, the local meat purveyor. So that's more like on the 5 hour end. It's 2 hours as if you're just one trip to one store.
Let's talk a little bit about the devices that are most common in people's homes or becoming more common in people's homes. That's the Echo, the Alexa, the Google Home, the Alexa specifically. People are using this now to refill their orders and order groceries. What kind of competition, how does that dive into your competition there? You got an eye on that?
Yeah, I mean, we are always paying attention to new and emerging technologies. And as a R&D software and engineering firm first, you can imagine that we're always experimenting with different ordering mechanisms and trying to keep our eye out on what's coming out in the next few months or next few years in terms of ways people are interacting with their groceries. We're very bullish about voice as an ordering platform. It's different for groceries, right? Because groceries are just they're just a different category than, let's say, ordering electronics or something like that. But the voice is very exciting. We think voice and the whole personal assistant space is very exciting.
And you have a goal of reaching 80% of American households by next year. Are you still working on that goal?
Yeah, we're making very good progress and probably ahead of schedule on that front. Every week we are announcing, you know, somewhere between 3 to 5 new markets, in addition to massive expansion, the one we're talking about here in Chicago, where we'll be serving an additional 310,000 households, hiring hundreds of shoppers. So,
well, best of luck as you move forward, and thanks for being with us here on the Opening Bell.
Thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Neelam Ganan-Thirin is the Chief Business Officer at Instacart, expanding to 70 new zip codes in the Midwest. You can check them out online at instacart.com.
From ABC News Tech Trends, Microsoft's next-generation gaming console,
Xbox One X.
At its unveiling at this year's Electronic Entertainment Expo, or E3, Microsoft said it had three main goals for the Xbox One X.
Power, compatibility, and craftsmanship.
Engadget's Dana Woolman says the console offers unparalleled power.
The story here is that it is the most powerful gaming console ever made.
And more good news for gamers. 4K ultra-high def graphics and something the company has called super sampling, which makes older games look even sharper on screen. But Woolman says if users don't already have a 4K TV, they're not getting the most out of the console's specs, and the $500 price tag may be a hard pill to swallow.
On paper right now, it's a tough sell for anyone who's not a super Microsoft fan.
Xbox One X is due out November 7th. With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 540. Glad to have you here for our Monday edition of the Opening Bell. Story that's been trending over the last couple of weeks stems from a recent study published in the Washington Post. Nowhere in the country where you work full-time on a minimum wage salary can you afford a two-bedroom apartment, a modest apartment. The annual report comes from a group called the National Low Income Housing Coalition. And Diane Yentl is the president and CEO of the organization. She's with us this morning here on the Opening Bell. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here with us. This was a story that, as I mentioned, was took hold on social media. I see it trending immediately after it came out. It says what? That if you make a full-time, if you work full-time on a minimum wage job, you can't afford a modest apartment. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the report we put out is called Out of Reach, and in it we determine what we call the housing wage. So that's how much you would have to earn an hour just to be able to afford to rent a modest two-bedroom apartment. And nationally, the housing wage is $21.21. In Illinois, the housing wage is $20.87 an hour. So in other words, that's how much you have to earn just to be able to rent a two-bedroom apartment. So if you're earning minimum wage in Illinois, you would have to work 101 hours a week to rent that modest two-bedroom apartment. And in fact, there's no place in the country where a minimum wage worker can work just 40 hours a week and be able to rent a two-bedroom apartment. There's only 12 counties in the entire country where that minimum wage worker could rent a one-bedroom apartment.
Why did you decide to do this study, and what does it show?
Well, this is a study that the National Income Housing Coalition has been doing for over 20 years now, and it's a study that we do each year in order to provide the data that members of Congress and decision makers need to see how severe the housing crisis is. And in fact, it shows again and again that the housing crisis is pervasive, that it's impacting every community across the country from rural to urban to suburban. And that it's impacting the lowest income people most severely.
And there has always been this talk of a living wage. People should be able to make a living wage. This sort of highlights how bad the wages are, doesn't it, in terms of being able to not just live, but to have a place to live.
Well, it does. I mean, and it shows in Illinois, of course, that the minimum wage is about a little over $8 an hour. And again, you know, at that wage, and these are, I think it's important to recognize who are minimum wage workers as well. You know, these are hospice workers, they're people taking care of our kids, they're emergency medical technicians, they're people in our community that we rely on and interact with every day. They can't begin to afford these kind of housing wages. But it's not just for the minimum wage workers for whom housing costs are out of reach. The average renter in Illinois earns just a little over $16 an hour, which is still more than $3 less than the housing wage for that two-bedroom apartment. So it's a problem of both low wages and very high housing costs.
And how do I phrase the next question without it sounding the wrong way? But in the years that you've been doing this survey, this research, has there ever been a year when these wages could afford a two-bedroom home?
Well, the problem is the housing crisis has gotten far worse since the foreclosure crisis back in 2007, 2008, when we had so many more former homeowners entering the rental market. Rental costs really skyrocketed and wages remained stagnant. And for the lowest income people, they really declined. So the housing crisis has increased since that time. But for the lowest income people, the crisis has been going on much longer than that. And we'd have to go back to really the early 80s or the late 70s for a time when there was a surplus of homes affordable and available to the lowest income people, where now there's a real shortage of over 7 million homes affordable and available to the lowest income people.
So, Dan, what needs to be done first to help alleviate some of these issues?
Well, again, it's both a wage issue and a housing cost issue. So to solve this affordable housing crisis, we need to see both increased wages, especially for the lowest income people. But even then, we will have a problem of wages not meeting the rising housing costs. So, and for the lowest income people, the private market cannot meet the housing needs. So there's no way to make a profit and build housing and operate housing for people who earn so little. That's where the federal government comes in, and an increased federal investment is necessary to increase housing affordability for those lowest income people. There's a number of proven solutions to ending homelessness, ending housing poverty for low-income people, programs like Section 8 voucher programs, other rental assistance programs. There's a program called the National Housing Trust Fund Program. It's one of our newest federal housing programs that was created precisely to meet this need to make rental units affordable to low-income people.
Where are they doing it better than, let's say, Illinois or one of the other states that's low on this list? Are there examples of it going in the right direction?
Well, again, unfortunately, the housing crisis has been growing. It's been becoming more severe for the lowest income people, and it's pervasive. It impacts every community across the country. So another way of looking at this, we have another report that we call The Gap that shows the shortage of homes affordable and available for the lowest income people. And we find that nationally, for every 100 extremely low income households, there are just 35 homes that are affordable and available to them. And in Illinois, it's actually a little less than that. For every 100 of those deeply poor renter households, there are just 32 homes affordable and available. And that, we find across the country, there is no place where there are enough rental units affordable to the lowest income people. So unfortunately, it's a pervasive crisis. And again, a reason why we need more federal investment in the solution.
You said earlier that you're hoping that those in government are paying attention to reports like this. Do you get a sense that they are or not?
I think that because the crisis has been growing and it's been impacting more and more people and more people up the income ladder, that the problem has been getting increased attention. But I think that we're still a long ways from the federal government being willing to make the investment at the scale necessary to meet the need.
Diane, thank you for being with us on the opening bell today and for your work on this report.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. Have a good morning.
You too. Diane Yentl is the president and CEO of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. You can find out more online at NILHC.org. That's NILHC.org, the National Low Income Housing Coalition.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. It's 5:50. Let's join British Prime Minister Theresa May in progress. She's
the
making a statement on last night's terrorist attack in London.
This morning, we have seen a sickening attempt to destroy those freedoms and to break those bonds of citizenship that define our United Kingdom. It is a reminder that terrorism, extremism, and hatred take many forms, and our determination to tackle them must be the same whoever is responsible. As I said here 2 weeks ago, there has been far too much tolerance of extremism in our country over many years, and that means extremism of any kind, including Islamophobia. That is why this government will act to stamp out extremist and hateful ideology, both across society and on the internet, so it is denied a safe space to grow. It is why we will be reviewing our counter-terrorism strategy and ensuring that police and security services have the powers they need.
Theresa May live in London outside of number 10 Downing Street this morning, making a statement after what appears to be another terrorist attack in London. We'll continue monitoring this in the newsroom. Have more in our news segments throughout the morning right here on 720 WGN. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street, up about 68 points, and NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Now the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Looking back to last Friday, it didn't take long for reaction to roll in from the agricultural trade community on President Trump's announcement that he was going to roll back part of what he called the terrible Obama-Cuba policy. Farm organizations and commodity groups reacted quickly. The U.S. Grains Council pointed out that in the first 8 months of this marketing year, Cuba purchased more than 250,000 metric tons. That's 9.8 million bushels of corn from the United States. That's about 30% of what they need. And they're concerned that the announcement by President Trump could impact that market negatively. We also heard from the National Corn Growers Association, the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, and Illinois corn growers, Illinois beef producers, Illinois pork producers, and Illinois soybean producers, all reacting negatively. So it'll be interesting to see if Mr. Trump will modify some of what's going to take place. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has an interesting meeting scheduled for today in Savannah, Georgia. He's going to be meeting with the ministers of agriculture of Canada and Mexico, who are coming into Savannah, Georgia, to talk trade. And, of course, I'm sure they'll talk about the future of the NAFTA trade agreement. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. And on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, not much on the calendar today in terms of business and government reports on the economy. A couple of things happening, though, impacting the markets potentially. Formal talks begin between the UK and the European Commission regarding Britain's withdrawal from the European Union in what are being billed as the most important negotiations in the country's history. It is the first meeting of the American Technology Council at the White House. President Trump established that council to promote the secure, efficient, and economical use of information technology. Expect senior executives from technology groups like Apple, Facebook, and Google to be there. NASA will hold a media briefing later today to announce the latest planet candidate results from the agency's exoplanet-hunting Kepler mission. Coming this week, FedEx reports earnings on Tuesday. Wednesday, Vermont starts recreational marijuana special session. They could legalize recreational marijuana. Thursday, Barnes & Noble earnings, as well as Bed Bath & Beyond. And then Friday, BlackBerry releases its earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets, including today on this Monday, June 19th.